Hey, what's up, guys? This is Lucas Burnley. You are listening to the Edge and Flow podcast. I'm here with my co-host, TJ Schwartz. How's it going, TJ?
Going great.
Going
Really
great.
great, actually. It's been a fun week.
You and I have been on for close to an hour already, just discussing feeds and speeds. We're going to go over a few specific things today. Most notably, we are going to discuss the Reeve cup wheel grinding method, which is magic, kind of game changing. But we know that's super meaty, so we're going to do a little housekeeping and just kind of discuss what's going on in the shops first, right?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Okay. What do you got going on?
Well, prep for that new machine, which ties into what we're going to talk about later, but we have had a pretty strong week. We're kind of bouncing back from September being a lot of di a disappearing act is what I keep saying. I kind of
Yeah.
like vanished every weekend and Dalton went hunting for a week, and so now we're
It's the best.
rebounding and it feels good. I think it's nice to have like a meet of 4 day weeks ahead of us that we can kind of plan for real, and actually get things done. So it's been good. We had our first workplace injury accident type thing.
Oh,
Super,
man.
super minor. Dalton, was grinding water jet tabs, wearing safety glasses, 60 grit belt on a 2x72, got a bouncer, a piece of metal in the eye, like a little tiny, like a flake, a little tiny speck. Didn't really notice it until the next morning. But he went in and got that pulled out this week. Felt great. Said it didn't really bother him that much. He just didn't want to risk it.
Itchy.
And so
Even with glasses on.
with glasses, so I bought, he told me that. And while he was telling me that, I ordered a couple of face shields, a couple of like full masks.
Nice.
We're going to get a little bit more serious about the grinding corner and face shields and stuff.
Nice. Was it a new belt?
I honestly don't know. Probably not. I don't
So
know.
weird, like super knife makery best practice stuff. There's certain jobs that throw off crazy abrasive at first. It's shedding the abrasive. It's like wearing in. It might even be, if that's the primary function of that, it's like you do a dulling pass. Like you run a bar of steel off it. You take all the grit that's just gonna pop off when you know it's gonna come off at one time, and then you go into your like profiling.
Totally. Yeah, I wasn't of, watching. I don't know what happened, but it was, I mean, he didn't do anything wrong at all. It was just that I think part of it is their water jet tabs off the end of the LT5s
Yeah.
that are gnarly, like little hooks.
Yeah, it's a little
And so
hook.
you can't get them ground off without like destroying a belt.
Yeah.
So it's just
Old belt. That's
how it
an old
is.
belt job for
Yeah,
sure.
you're right. Yeah.
Nice, man. I know that we can't go too far into what you're doing because we're gonna start getting into the grinding conversation.
Let's hear what you have to say.
So I'm riding a really weird line right now. I had a super productive week running Kihokus. During that week, I asked you about some process speeds, some feeds and speeds, because I've always run super conservatively, and I'm not a machinist, right? And I would rather have a part run clean than be the most optimized version of that thing. It's starting to make a bigger difference because the Kihoku is more efficient, right? So I'm noticing, and I'm running more of them, so it's like I'm noticing the time difference. Conversation with you this morning basically cut my process time for coming out with like a finished tang in half almost. We shaved 12 minutes out of like 20 plus minutes. It's insane.
Yeah, I am quite a fan of going fast, faster than you think you can, and then slowing down once you run into problems. So like most of my programs come out way too hot, and then I'm like, holy cow, that tool burned out in like three parts, like 10% slower. And then run it again. Okay, we made 10 parts. Okay, that's still not as much as we'd like, a little bit slower. So like I start high and then come down on the speed, because machining speed I really care about. a lot. So
it makes perfect sense the way the different way that you and I have worked up until this point, right? Which is I went the exact opposite. I was worried about breaking tools, crashing parts, but I'm making way fewer pieces. And I've usually like if I'm like working on folders, like I don't want to break a tiny little end mill in a part that I've already got a bunch of time in, but it's prototype method mentality almost, right? Which is like, I want a finished part. I'm seeing with these that I think the other version of that is probably much more efficient. Like I'd rather break a few tools and then be able to save half the time once I'm going.
I was just gonna say, I like looking at a program, and when I see that some feed or speed is the way it is, I like having at least a little bit of confidence that like we already tried more than that and this is what we had to come down to. Whereas if I start conservative, then you really never know. You know what I mean? You could be operating at like 25% efficiency and you'll just never know. So I like coming down.
I think that makes I think it makes a lot of sense. You also don't have like a bunch of preconceived notions or like learning a method to do something. And I think that that kind of illustrates like almost like a founder mentality, right? Where the way that I learned to run things with knives, especially, like you get feeds and speeds that kind of work across a broad spectrum of parts. It's like rinse and repeat. So there's huge periods of time where I just had like a recipe that worked and I didn't change it. I wasn't worried about if it was the most efficient thing. I was just worried that it worked. New eyes on a project, I think, is really important. In this case, you looking at my project with new eyes, but like as solo operators, a lot of times, like that all comes back to us. And I would bet that a lot of people kind of stay static. Do you agree?
Yeah, and that brings up a point that I should be talking to about getting someone on a Zoom call to look at mine, because I know I've got blind spots in there. So I think that's a great mentality in general, especially with feeds and speeds, is you get complacent with them and it's like, why are you interpolating that? You know, there's this drill that'll drill and give you a finish diameter,
But we don't. That's the point, right? Like you are the expert at creating the thing, and we all have different strengths. So there's a programmer out there who's also doing this, who that is actually their strength, right? For us, there's that always this balance point of like, where is your time best spent? Where does your skill or interest or knowledge like allow you to make improvements? I just mentioned that podcast with Intolerance. And it's interesting listening to them. Like recently they had a guest on who is basically like a hired gun programmer. So he would come into your business, look at the parts you're making, and he would create tool paths, feeds and speeds,
Fire
everything for
people.
those parts. Dude,
No.
just yell at everybody and like, tell them they're trash and then leave and be like,
It's like
drop the laptop and walk out the door.
what's the guy's name? Ramsey TV show,
Yeah,
Hell's Kitchen or
totally.
something.
Yeah, it's like a Hell's Kitchen for machine shops. Honestly, a fantastic idea.
That'd be pretty
Did
fun.
that does that exist?
Just for manufacturing in general, that'd be pretty funny.
Dude, that would be people would love it. 'Cause you'd have someone that would have to have such a broad spectrum base of knowledge that they could walk into like
Elon Musk.
Yeah, do you like walk in? Yeah, it'd basically be Elon Musk just coming and yelling at you. I mean, he'd probably take it on. He's got time. Right? But like imagine you like walk into a Coke bottling plant versus like, a furniture company. Like they're going to be different processes, but someone who truly understands the flow and manufacturing might, oh, don't want to see it now. If anyone's listening, make that show.
Do it.
I
Do it.
love it. Okay, so we did that. Let's see. We talked about Blade West a little bit last
I want to
week.
ask you about this dinner.
Oh,
This Explain it.
lay it on me. I am doing kind of it's kind of what a it's a collab. Basically, it's like a collab with a restaurant. Okay.
It's brilliant.
It's super, super exciting for me. And it was based on an invitation. These are the kind of things that I'm always looking to do. Is it the most efficient use of time? I don't know, but it hits like a core value for me, which is community building. Okay. Basic idea is I'm going down to the Bay Area. I'm going to go hang out at Amarantai with a very small group and basically do like a trunk show. They limited the spot. So it's like, I think they had like a max of 50 spots. It's really small and it's local. So I think we maybe have like 15 people coming.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally just hanging out and eating. So it's taking like one of the best aspects of what we love about shows, like working with the fact that I'm actually kind of an introvert and like small gatherings, and then tying a little bit of product into it and making an event.
That's really interesting. When I saw that banner pop up on Instagram or whatever, I was like, I mean, no one's thought of that. That's like classic Burnley move to just do something totally unique. Not from a like nuts and bolts perspective, but from a more higher level, like just brand movement like that is so interesting across different platforms. It's weird.
This not, is where not a bad this is way. Where like, I stroke. No,
it's
but
weird that you're able
question.
To keep doing that is what I mean.
No, but that actually is like a very valid, right? Which is, I don't know a lot of times if the weird things that I'm doing are actually a good idea or not.
I think they are. I think it's integral.
Right. I think at this point, it's not damaging. It's not negative. It's not the most productive or efficient use of time. But like, I always talk about this where I'm like, the bottom line is for me is wavy. There's so many different aspects of business that can provide value, not only from a business standpoint, but also from the like concept of like creating like a rich experience and a rich like life around work. And I really like Thai food.
I love it, man.
I'm super excited. We'll see how it plays out. Basically, like from a product standpoint, we did. So you buy a ticket to the dinner. Okay. And you can either add on a SciPop to that or not. And then I'll have like a little bit of product at the show. One of the reasons that we're doing this, I did two big shows this summer and I was fully maxed out. I knew that coming into the fall, I wasn't going to have a ton of time, but I was watching all the shows happening and knowing that I was like missing out on seeing people. This was kind of a way to be able to have my cake and eat it too. I'm not going to a show. I can drive down to San Francisco. Yeah. I can take a handful of pieces, super low stress. Yeah. But I get the social aspect of it.
That's awesome.
Super excited. I will let you know how it goes. I guess we'll probably talk before I'm like in the making stuff stage of it right now. It's November 9th. And I haven't even posted about it yet. So this was a Joey concept. Okay. The restaurant is one of my collectors that's down in the Bay Area. So like just kind of fun things. Like we let him pick the SciPop shape because he has a favorite.
That's,
you know,
so
just
cool.
Like small things. Without Joey, this would not be happening because he kind of pieced it together.
Nice.
Right. And this is like, we've been in like this hole kind of where project management is a major gap for me. Right. It's almost like the programming. I'm really, really good at building relationships and starting projects. Once those projects are started, I actually have a very hard time maintaining them.
Mm-hmm.
Probably some of it is due to ADHD. Some of it is just life in general, but like having someone who is the filter for the consistent projects is huge, but also someone who can see like opportunity in a pocket.
Right.
So
no, Joey's awesome.
Different. It's like a bunch of weird lateral moves. I know I could really use someone just in the shop helping me build product. but I somehow can't seem to get away from like working around the perimeter. It's the same like the social media thing I'm doing right now, right? That money could be spent on an employee. Arguably a better dollar for dollar investment, but my brain is seeing something different.
Yeah.
I just
Well,
don't know if it's right or
that's
not.
why Burnley brand is different, though. I mean, for real.
I wish I could be different and productive because that would
That
be awesome.
is the dream. I like that.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then other than that, it's funny like saying it kind of post action. I actually have been pretty efficient because so I've been running parts. We just did a big clothing drop. Another project where when you look at it from purely from a number standpoint, like it doesn't really even out, but I love doing it so much, right? So we just released it like a collection called War of Roses. And it was, you know, it's like two shirts, a hat, a little side product. But man, apparel is one of those things where to do it well takes time. And that's like an obvious statement, but it like disproportionately to me. Like to do it to where it feels like maybe feels like a clothing company releasing clothing is how I look at it. It definitely is, man, it's just a different production flow than knives,
Yeah, for sure.
you
Soft goods
know?
are, yeah,
Because you're
different.
dealing with sizes, you're dealing with like this one from a strategic standpoint. A lot of times we will do pre-orders. Okay. The beauty of a pre-order is you're able to judge, you know what sizes to order. In the past, we've done pre-orders based on renderings or mock-ups of a shirt or a sweater or whatever we're doing. This one we actually printed first, but like a fairly small run because we just don't know what the demand for a new line is. We sold out of it super fast. And so we have two options. We can either look at it as a pre-order moving forward, or we can look at it as we reorder product and re-release. It's tricky,
Yeah,
you
it
know?
is. It's trickier than most other things with the sizing.
And we're not clothing companies, right? So I don't know. I love it though. It worked. We're like, so that's my week. Machining, clothing drop, bunch of design work. And now podcast.
Here we are.
Here we are.
I
Can
like it, man.
we talk about cup wheel grinding now?
We can't. Yeah.
Okay.
No, I'm really in the hyper focus on it right now, a little
Okay.
bit.
This is your shop update.
Yeah, this is
Let's start there.
I sharpened knives, I inspected knives, I did the things I needed to do on the production side, but other than that, I focused on cup wheel grinding. I talked to a lot of people on the phone. I Googled as much as I could, although there's almost nothing to find doing it that way, which is part of why we're talking about it right here. But the method that I would like to call this is the Reeve grinding method. So the history is totally wrapped up in Chris Reeve knives, dates back decades, and this is something that they found a need for, just like every maker does, which is how do you grind bevels at any kind of production scale? And I think they came up with something really effective, really, in a weird way, actually really approachable and affordable, which is actually the main thing about it that makes it interesting to me. But the fact that the precision it achieves and the scalability at the same time with the affordability, it seems to me like the future of anybody not bench made grinding bevels. Seems like it's the beginning of a takeover, I suspect.
So, and this is why I think it's really, really important to give credit where credit is due,
Yeah.
because I see this as this is like slow burn, but game changing technology. Because what it allows a small shop to do is grind bevels at a level of precision, but also speed that maybe it doesn't rival like a burger CNC grinder
Yeah.
speed wise purely, but for a smaller shop, I think it's actually gives much more flexibility.
Yes. Yeah.
And the buy-in is so vastly different that
Yes. We're
it is.
talking the way that I'm going to do it is 90% less money than buying like a
90%.
Seatman. It's one tenth. I could do this 10 times over and not, and basically then have a Seatman.
And
So,
probably a margin similar in flexibility.
yes. And the also the thing is, I'm very confident in the precision of this over dedicated knife grinding machines. I think this is actually the most precise method that I'm aware of. If you're a little bit more focused on precision over speed, this is also beneficial. So I guess that's a good platform to stand on as we talk about this, that let's call it the Reeve method.
The Reeve method.
I'm going to start referring to that as best I can, the Reeve method. It's just like the Reeve integral lock. We dropped the Reeve a long time ago, but the integral lock is the frame lock is the Reeve integral lock. This is the Reeve grinding method. So we're hoping that sticks a little better. So I got an X9 on the way. We're gonna put
Sile
a,
X9. It's on the
yep,
way.
we're gonna put a grinding wheel in the spindle, not an end mill. And we're gonna grind bevels with a wheel in a three-axis mill.
In a brand, wait. You're telling me that you're going to use a grinding wheel inside of a brand new CNC machine, a grinding wheel with abrasives. Is that what you're telling me?
That's what I'm telling you. So this
Hell
brings
yeah.
up, I got off the phone with a vendor that sells wheels that is a longtime friend of Chris's, Chris Reeve, and a longtime vendor with the wheels. And he said that he told Chris the same thing when he's like, everyone, he told me the backstory. He's like, everyone thought Chris was crazy for putting grinding wheels in brand new CNC mills. And they're like, you're going to destroy that machine with abrasive. And he's like, so. That was his response. He's
Hell
like,
yes.
yeah. So the thought of wearing down your waves and ball screws with grinding dust, you have to overlook that because you got to realize this machine is made for this process once you set it up right, and it's there to make money,
It's a
and it's there
grinding
to
machine now.
grind knives. So if it eats itself in the process, it is what it is. You know what I mean? It's just like any grinder, but
And we are talking this. This is understanding the difference in wear and life as it relates to knife making and not like maybe a lights out job shop also. There's some differences.
yeah.
Understanding the end product changes the nature of a tool.
Yes. And the other thing I will say is I think it has turned out that that's an overblown thing, that the abrasive doesn't matter. Because there's machines that have been bevel grinding for decades and I've never
And
heard
we are
anyone
talking
say,
numbers.
yeah, thousands of knives, it doesn't really matter because you're running coolant and then you have to filter the coolant, but you don't have chips to deal with, so we're planning on putting to start with, we're just going to put paper in the chip tray, and all that's coming out is grinding dust in the coolant and metal chips that are literal dust because it's grinding. And so a paper just in your chip tray is going to be a good start. And then we're also going to add that same system that we have on the X7, which is the coolant is going to get paper band filtered. But I don't think we'll need that immediately because we're not dealing with like gallons of chips.
The
We're dealing
volume isn't there.
Yeah, it's a fine, gonna be a fine layer of silt after we've ground a bunch of knives. So anyway, I've developed the program and developed the fixture to do this on the Overland Sport, and I'm really excited to see how it goes. And one thing we're doing a little differently is we're using a much bigger wheel than you would normally see for such a small knife, but we want as close to a flat grind as we can get. So the angle, we have the Overland Sport tipped down at 2 degrees, and then a 6-inch wheel comes in and grinds the bevel. And so it's the bottom face of the wheel, not the side. It's the knife is facing upward. The grinding wheel comes down and flat grinds on the bottom of the cup. And so the tip of the knife, the further down it's pointed, then the more hollow your bevel becomes. because you're closer you're getting to actually using the radius of the wheel. So at a 2 degree tip down angle with a 6 inch wheel on the Overland Sport, I did some simulations and the hollow is less than 2 thou in the middle.
Yeah.
So we're talking about when it's freshly ground, you're going to be able to see it. There's going to be like the curve of the lines and the reflection is obviously going to show it. Yeah. But I suspect either when coated or tumbled, it's probably not going to be as, it
it's
may not be
almost
noticeable
look
at all.
Like a full flat.
Yeah. Essentially flat.
Well, and that's one of the big strengths of this method is that you can actually create a hollow grind,
mm-hmm.
right? Whereas like the Seatmans and the Burgers, like they are super efficient at creating flat grinds,
which is where Reeve really became popular for their hollow grinds. You look at all their stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I it's amazing, man. And this is a great example of kind of like maverick mentality, knowing what you need done, right? Inside of your business, everyone telling you that you're not doing it right,
mm-hmm.
but having like the confidence to just look at it and say, well, yeah, that's great that that doesn't work for you, but this is working for me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And like you said, this is decades old, right? Yep.
So Benzos have been ground this way for 25 years, 30 years. I don't know.
Yeah.
Long, long time.
Yeah. it's awesome.
So yeah, we're going to roll with it. And I got to shout out to Tim directly, Tim Reeve, because he's a good friend of mine and he's been overwhelmingly helpful with this. Like we're talking just an outpouring of just any information I need and all the support in the world. And he's an awesome guy and it's been great. And it's like you said before the pod, it's a reason to love this industry because there's a lot of people like that. It's great. And
it makes me happy to see that it scales. I've always said that if you ask a maker how to do something, like there's a good chance, like he's going to tell you at a show and then he's going to follow up and like send you an email and like a diagram, you know, a lot of times that's really true. And that's on the small scale side. That doesn't always hold true as businesses grow.
Mm-hmm.
I love businesses that I feel are ambassadors for the industry. And I think, you know, Chris Reeve Knives really embodies that.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Nice. And Gavin Hawk, he's been doing the same method on all his output up there. He's been very helpful. I feel very lucky to be in the Boise Valley where this grind was born and to know the people at the ground floor and then to have that sort of exchange information available without me having to be like a sleuth and like, you know,
pry,
you know, it's just an open thing. Super happy. And I'm really optimistic. The big thing to get more into what I was doing this week is the fixture. You have to hold the blade in either a minimum 4-axis method or probably 5-axis to get what you really want. And you don't have to do a simultaneous movement. You just have to get it held at like through a compound angle in a weird way. So some bigger companies would use a 5-axis machine. You'd put the knife on a flat pallet, just a flat piece of a fixture, and then you would kick it at those two angles and then you would grind it. Well, I'm not really interested in spending the kind of money on a 5-axis. So what I'm doing is there's a local company down the road that has a 5-axis mill that they focus on aluminum, build aluminum parts. And I said, if I bring you a Pearson pallet and the base so that you can just bolt the whole thing into your 5-axis, would you make this 5-axis fixture for me? And they said, yeah, no problem. We can do it. So as soon as they confirmed that they could do that for me, I designed a Pearson pallet that has like a 2 degree grade and then a kick with the knife being in the opposite direction. So it's 2 degree tip down. And then the sport, it's going to be dependent on the model, but the sport's at like 3.6 degrees edge up.
Wow.
So it's like tip down edge up to get to where the bevel presents itself flatly to the wheel. And then simulating it, making sure all those angles are right. And so we're pretty much ready. I got the quote for the wheel. I got to get the holder to figure that out. So, but the fixture is now designed and I will be pitching it over to them once I'm ready to go to 5-axis machine, this weird fixture. And then the other thing is it's a through spindle coolant machine, and this is a process that really needs through spindle coolant, because the cup ends up grinding on the inside of the wheel because it's not a flat bottom, it's like a hollow cup. And
Right.
so you don't grind on the OD, you're grinding on the ID of the wheel because it's moving forward with the heel grinding. And so you can't get flood coolant inside the wheel because, you know, how would you do that? So you really need through spindle coolant so that the coolant comes out from the center bore and then makes its way to the inside. And the centrifugal force forces the coolant out to the edges, the periphery of the wheel. And then when it hits the outside of the wheel, it shoots down. So if you run it in the air, you almost have like a shower head kind of
Oh,
cone
wow.
of coolant coming
Yeah.
out because it's spinning. So the coolant exiting the spindle has to try to get out, and it goes right where you want it, which is ideal. But there's a few little tricks that I have to figure out to get that all to jive. But really need to get a lot of coolant where it needs to go. Need through spindle coolant, and luckily got that on this machine. And then we're gonna get that fixture built. We're gonna try to grind this sucker, and it's gonna be
So
fun.
this is, there's two things that are really important. One, this has been now running in my head because you said tip down, edge up. And I immediately thought tip down, edge up. That's the way I like to cup. Cause that's ADHD for you. You're welcome.
Dude, that's so good.
And
That's a shirt.
second, yeah, I mean, it should be, this is not without pretty significant work. What you need to make this work is not minor. Okay, we're talking about five axis fixtures. We are talking about machines that have capability. Like, I don't have a machine with, you know, through spindle coolant right now. What we are talking about is for small shops or shops that are starting to scale. This is probably the most viable production worthy method of
Yes.
grinding if you want to do it in-house,
Yeah.
right?
Minimum, if you have a Cat 40 spindle, you can do it because you can grind without through spindle coolant because I know that it's being done out there.
Okay.
But your feed rate is going to be extremely low compared to what the wheel is capable of. So because the problem is you're going to burn the part, you're going to burn the steel, you're going to overheat it.
Yeah.
And so you can grind, but it's much like orders of magnitude slower to not have the through spindle coolant getting where it
Sure.
needs to go. So I will say that if you have a Cat 40 spindle, you can do it.
You can figure it out. You
I've
can make it
known
work.
of Fadals doing this. So we're talking $6,000 machine, Cat 40 spindle can be done.
Like an
So
old, we're talking like
like an
an
old,
old
like a
machine.
90s machine. Yeah. It's
Right.
not asking a whole lot of a machine.
Right.
Other than the main enemy of grinding is vibration. And
Right.
so mass matters. And that's where the
Yeah.
X9 excels
Yeah.
beyond really anything in the market that I'm aware of. And so I'm excited for that. You don't need a lot of RPM. You don't need any fast rapids. You don't need a, because I mean, there's no tool changes. There's no movement really in the rapid. And you're
Yeah.
feeding very slow. So you don't need a ton of really anything that makes most modern machines good. You just need mass and a Cat 40 spindle and hopefully through spindle coolant, which is a pretty
This
easy checklist to get.
that's super easy. So you need a bigger machine, but like to put this in perspective, like it's pretty easy to spend $5,000 on a 2x72 grinder at this point. Okay. So if we're talking about this as a dedicated production grinding machine that is orders of magnitude faster and more precise. I mean, like right now I'm hard milling the Kihoku blades. To me, it's amazing. It's magic. But I'm limited. There's steels that I can't really hard mill.
You still have
It's
to grind
still
it.
slow. I still have to do finish, like significant finishing afterwards. But it's a really, really good method. Okay. It is not comparable in speed, though.
Yeah, and one of the big things is, I'll say this, I don't actually know, because we've gotten really good at milling bevels in the
Yeah.
soft state, I
Yeah.
don't actually know if it's going to be faster as far as actual cycle time.
Yeah.
What I do know is that the finishing downstream is relieved
Is
by like a
relieved.
giant percentage. Like So we stone, like hand finish all of our milled bevels, including ones that are covered in Cerakote. So before it's Cerakoted, we know that we're going to sometimes get the lines coming through even Cerakote. And so we're stoning for Cerakote, whereas this Cerakote's 100% going to cover it. No, like for sure it's covered by Cerakote. And then if you're in stone, if you do the right setup and you have it set up really nicely, by and large, you're going to be able to stone wash it without much finishing work, maybe like spot treating it. But it's stone wash is going to be a different ball game altogether with this method. And Dalton will thank us for that because he's stoning bevels, and I've got to get to where we're not putting so much weight on him to do that. It's not good. So.
You know what I think is interesting? This is kind of a adjacent thought. What I love about a process like this becoming a little more like accessible, for lack of a better word, because I mean, like this inside of knife community, this is almost an urban legend. People kind of know about it, but they don't know it, right? And you'll talk to someone and they know a little bit, but it is, you had said, like this is a Boise Valley thing, right? That is where this has existed. So what I love about it being maybe a little more commonplace is in the knife industry, a few things are happening, which is one, the rise of OEM manufacturing is making it much easier to become a knife company, right? A production knife company. Some of the old methods of knife making are starting to fade. And this is just because, I mean, there's like multiple reasons, but like being in the TM Dowel shop is like a great example of kind of this. Like, there's methods that people aren't picking up because the people that they are learning from are not doing those things. Okay. A method like this is really timely for me because it gives people who do want to make and do like in-house manufacturing, it gives them another tool that they can use to be efficient, but it also gives them something to be excited about that they can learn. And so it's kind of like parallels, right?
Well, and a big point that I have is like we're seeing this democratization of manufacturing in the knife
Totally.
industry. So you're seeing like small manufacturers as
Yes.
opposed to like a few big ones. You're seeing all this spread happening in the US, which I love. And I'm one of those types that's like a small manufacturer doing stuff in a small way, but with the efficiency of this, CNC technology that's become approachable. That always the missing piece is that bevel, because it's like there's $700,000 Seatman, or there's a 2x72 hand grinder, and there's always been this gap between
No
that's
kidding.
like chasm. I mean, it's like you want to spend $750,000, or do you want to do it all by hand? Pick one. You know what I mean? And it's like this is that. I mean, fully honestly, like the machine is 60 grand delivered, and
And you, but
that's
you're starting with a new machine,
and it's
which you
brand
didn't
new.
even need to
You, no, you,
necessarily
no.
do, right?
Yeah, this is hopefully like a pretty high-end version of this process with a brand new machine. Like you could buy a $10,000 machine and do this. I know that for a fact. I've seen it done.
Or if you
And
have machines, you move one of your machines into that role, and then you buy a new machine for where you need a new machine.
So the gap was just cut in half or even less, you know what I mean? So it's without that, it's very hard for these small-time manufacturers to exist. And I don't really want to like start saying names, but a lot of the smaller manufacturers that you see that are doing really well with high-end cutlery, they're doing this. It's how it's possible. Honestly, it's just the small, like 5 to 10 man shop that makes knives is very difficult without this method, because you can't justify that leap. So this it's very meaningful in a very important way to just manufacturing in general of knives. I think it's crazy how much this means, I think.
Well, there's some of this stuff too. Like, you can easy yourself out of a job, right? Because there's always an easier way. And I think for a lot of us, there are things that we would really like to streamline or make more consistent. but we also really love the work. And so is it easier just to outsource CNC grinding? Well, yeah, but then you're not doing the grinding. If it fits your business model and you want to do that, that's awesome. But if you're wanting to do this in-house and have control over it, the chasm, like you said, has been just insane, right? Hard milling and milling, like, open this up a little bit. You start to, and this is like on the knife maker side. I mean, this is like something that people have been trying to crack for a long time. A lot of people are chasing, like, you have the more CNC-ish knife makers, and you have the more handmade kind of knife makers, and then you have like, it's a spectrum, right? But like, there was a lot of the machinist types that were really trying to chase like off the mill machined bevels.
To my knowledge, it's not been done reliably.
Yeah, reliably, or to like what you consider actually finished, or what I consider actually finished. The one caveat to that would be like, if you're doing some type of blade that the way that it is milled is part of the feature of the bevel,
See
right?
Grimsmo Norseman. Like it's
Yeah,
step
like
milled.
if you're step milling or doing like OG, like RJ Martin, when he was doing like the big like beaver tooth like cutouts in the bevel, which it has a really cool aesthetic, right?
RMJ
But it is an
Tactical, yeah.
aesthetic. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah. Perfect
if you
example.
want the like ribbed aesthetic on the bevel, milling
Yeah.
is absolutely gonna work. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
But if you want like that stone wash smooth bevel, it has to be ground. Like there are people that have accomplished it with hard milling,
Yeah.
like at the very apex of like I spent an hour and a half
Yeah.
running this. I did a rougher, a finisher, and a semi finisher,
Yeah.
and then I did have to touch up that one little spot, and then I tumbled it for like 6 hours, and
Yeah.
look, it worked.
Doable. Yeah.
It's absolutely at the bleeding edge, and I decided very early when I went to milling bevels that I was like, I don't think that's a possible solution. I don't think I can
For
get.
what you're doing, the way that you want to create.
And that was where we went. I was like, we're going to stone all the bevels and we're going to make them run as fast as they can on the mill. So we went like the complete other way of like, we're just going to get really good at stoning and let the machine just be as fast as it can be. It's worked for 3 years,
Yeah.
but we have hit a wall. Of like, okay, we are stoning all these bevels. If
Right.
we wanted to 2x the output, we cannot. So it's just we hit the wall of like, I don't know where else to go other than to start grinding, scaling
Right.
wise, you know what I mean?
Scaling wise.
Other than hiring a bunch of people to start stoning and you have like a array of people stoning these things,
Right.
which when you're staring at a $60,000 machine that can grind them, that's where the answer to the question came in. It's like, do you want five people stoning bevels or do you want this
Do you
machine
want
and
one
then
more
have
machine?
people who are machinists, people who are, and it's not like a job replacement thing. It's
Yeah.
the types of work that those people that I would hire would do are, you know, they're doing Cerakote, they're doing,
Yeah.
finishing assembly, sharpening, like, but it's not literally just glued to a bench finishing these dang
Yeah.
bevels. You know what I
Well,
mean?
and that's the difference. Like, that's like Industrial Revolution, right? Where crafts became mechanized in a way where it's like, no, you just push in the one button. Okay. Yeah, that's it. This is just sand this blade. That's your job. Right. I think it'll create not specifically cup wheel grinding, right? But I think that these small businesses do create a sense, I think, in a lot of cases, of people who realize that for their employees, some diversification is also nice. Like, your goal is not to be just pushing the stamping machine button necessarily, right? And I think that for longevity of the business, for employees, like, there's a lot of things that can be brought in a really like organic way that make it a better, more enjoyable place to work,
Yes, for sure. For
you
sure.
know?
And yeah, stoning is like in the Boise Valley, like I'm just familiar with manufacturers. Stoning is sort of like the eater of souls.
Yeah.
It's like known, you know what I
It's
mean?
like
It's
working in
like
a weld shop and being like, all you do is grind welds. Kind of. You're like, you're cleaning up the work that is needs cleaned up, but it's not satisfying.
So it's I just I don't want to build a business that has a giant pillar in the brand of like, we just have to have tens and tens of hours of stoning every week done to even operate. I'm not going to do it. I'm just not. So
super exciting, man. This, I'm very curious to see like where this ripples, and you know, it's as it's becoming more known. I do think that there's it's just like a small shift that is really going to help, you know, some of the smaller manufacturers. I wonder if like, so in the custom side, there's a lot of conversation around like the brands that are popping up as OEMs, right? Because like when I started, that really wasn't an option. Even if you did have access to some of the overseas manufacturers, it could be like hard to get deals. Like every once in a while, a knife maker would start a project and you'd be like, whoa, how did he do that? Right. Mm-hmm. Now it's more commonplace. I wonder if like the big manufacturers are having like the same, are noticing like the same thing around this, where they're like, geez, all these small shops, like when we started, this wasn't like wasn't an option.
Yeah, they needed a capital investment to get the burger grinder, and
you need to really like start with a business plan and get a bunch of loans, and like, not to say that you don't for this either, but I just wonder if big companies are seeing the growth of some of the smaller companies in the industry and going like,
the first step on the ladder in manufacturing knives is now equivalent to like a car payment. Whereas it used to be, no, you have to literally call up like your local multimillionaire.
And you still see that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You see that a lot of people that are in the industry or that have been, that are senior in the industry, how about that?
Mm-hmm.
Think that the capital outlay and the strategy for building a production company is way, way higher
mm-hmm.
than it actually is. It's still in like they're in the millions mindset, where they're like, no, to build a production knife company, you have to have $1 million or, you know, $2 million to buy machines and space. And it's like, that's not true.
No. Yeah. It's not,
you know?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
And this was the main goal, to get out of the garage. The number one reason was we could not fit a Cat 40 machine in the garage unless it was like a mini mill, which just wasn't ideal for
you. Would have still been maxed out.
Yeah, it wouldn't have worked. And so I was discussing with various like family and friends, like, can I shove like a Cat 40 machine in your garage? Because I was like, we need this grinding so bad and we cannot do it. So I signed the lease for this shop, ordered the X9 like that week or something, and now it's finally here. And so it was stressful because I wasn't feeling prepared until this week. And this week I designed the fixture, I figured out what wheel I needed, I talked to all the people, I built up my confidence, I felt like I had a real plan, so that when it gets here, I'm not just going to be staring at it for a month.
Right.
So now that I feel like I know the action plan, I'm like internalizing how important this is going to be for us. And other than hiring Dalton, it's like the most meaningful thing to the manufacturing side of our business that's ever happened. Like, it's high anticipation. I'll say that.
I love it, man. So. That is, it's so cool. I can't wait to come out. This is ridiculous that I still haven't been to the shop.
Yeah.
So as of right now, like if people do want to learn about like the Reeve grinding method, like, where does information exist? It really doesn't.
And it's been a verbal based Boise thing. It's like all the Boise manufacturers talk about it. No one writes anything down. There's no videos.
Yeah.
So that's basically what it's been, is just like a good old boys, like cup wheel grinding club.
Yeah.
And so that's an interesting thing. And this is maybe something I'll have to talk to Tim about, and I'll just be kind of transparent, is that like, I don't know if I feel very good about blasting all the information that I just picked up from other people.
Totally.
And so that's like, I'm an open book with anything that I develop. But it's like if someone tells me something and they were a little bit confiding and I felt like I just turned around and threw it out on YouTube or something,
Yeah,
that feels a
absolutely.
little weird. And so I'm like, that's why I maybe sound like I'm beating around the bush sometimes, but it's not a protection of myself. It's just more of like, who's going to be the person that just blows this all up? And that's fine. But the source was not me. So it's like, is it my information to blow up like that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a very good point, right? So if you're listening to this, you can only do this if you're in the Boise Valley, really. But no, I mean, honestly, at this point, there's enough chatter about it. It's kind of known, right? Like I said, it's semi-urban, like urban legend, but it's there, right? I'd be really curious to hear from Tim on this, because in my opinion, he's like don't like Tim and Ann are kind of the only ones that really have a say in it
If anyone
almost,
can say do or don't blow this up on YouTube, it's them.
Like,
They're
don't show the method. Like,
the only
talking
ones.
about a method, talking about something is very different. And like you said, you're kind of open book with everything, open source,
I might
so to
ask him,
speak.
like, honestly, if he gave me a blessing, I would instantly make a YouTube video of everything, like feeds and speeds and whatever, because I don't care. But
Helps the industry.
I would have to know that it doesn't feel,
Yeah.
like a betrayal. But I mean, I'm being pretty
Totally
transparent
fair.
there.
That's totally fair. Yeah.
But if people want to ask questions, pretty much everybody in the Boise Valley, everyone talks. Like nobody's like guarding these secrets. So I mean, just ask.
And it's across many, many businesses,
Like
of which,
Jens is bevel grinding. Tim helped him out really, it's like, yeah, if you want to bevel grind, because one of the Chris Reeve quotes, I was talking to Tim about this actually. One of the Chris himself quotes was he would give people tours of his factory, he always has. And somebody once asked him, like, well, why do you give a tour of your factory when you have all these proprietary processes? Because he is the type of guy that everything was proprietary. And he was like, I can show everybody how to do it. They still have to do the work.
That's
That
one
was
of my
his.
favorite quotes, and that is 100% how I've always felt. It's like, look, I can't stop someone from copying me. I can't stop if you see a technique, like, you just have to actually still do it.
Because it's like if I show someone how to cup wheel grind, or if he does, they still have to buy the machine, they still have to rent the space, they still have to put the wheel in there, they still have to design the knife, build the brand. Like, it's not like you're giving them a blank check. Like, they have to do it. You know what I mean? So if it's, and it's not, knife manufacturing, as Chris would say, is like it's difficult. So if you can survive and make it and make knives, that's amazing. Like you did the work.
Well, and the
Congrats,
argument here for me has always been that, like, look, I would rather have some, it's like the concept almost that, like, locks keep honest people out, kind of, right? In a way, I would rather be open with knowledge and have people that knew the history, that were grateful maybe for some insight or the help in the industry, than have people who are like feeling like they're stealing something. I think it makes a better industry, right? Like, I look at that exactly with you helping me develop the Kihoku, right? I would not have been able to do it the way that I'm doing it in the timeline that I've done it without you literally sharing what you had figured out. Your process also came from similar relationships, right? Like, you've pieced it together, you've learned. And that's one of the beautiful things about, I think, the knife industry, which is we all work really, really hard, but you can't be the best at everything. And so, one, you have to be humble enough to ask for help, but you also have to have enough like drive to put it into action. I love that, you know.
And like it's generic, but like the rising tide lifts all ships is very
Totally.
true. We, in American manufacturing with knives, it's like it got to a point, 10, 15 years ago where there were only like three companies actually doing it, at a high level. And it's like, it in a weird way is almost like an extinction event. of knife manufacturing. You know what I mean? And it's like there is sort of a surge comeback story happening. And it's like that only works if there's collaboration. You know what I mean? There has to be
Yeah, you need
yeah.
enough volume and in the system to be able to actually make a change, right? Oh, going to OEM is a great example of this. Like a lot of the OEM work that started to come out happened at a time where there was a vacuum around the custom work, right? If that vacuum had maintained, I think it would have been damaging. So a lot of the OEM projects that started to come out, it did two things. Like you said, democratized the industry a little bit because it allowed someone who maybe didn't have a background in making or didn't have the capital to or the time to like build a shop to use what their resources were. So maybe it was like, I mean, like in your case, like CAD, right? You did it at a time in the industry where working with companies was still the option. Whereas now, if TJ was out right now, it might be like you would be going directly into your own product line. You know, I think it's really helpful. I think I don't know, this last couple of years has felt like similar, right? With smaller brands popping up, small brands getting much bigger, like really scaling. Right. And you look and you're like, what is this? Right. Because the market is down. Like market in general is down. The knife market is down. But I think that a valuable thing to remember is that down does not mean like across the board. Right. You
The
can
wind
look
is
and see
shifting the
like,
sands. It's going somewhere.
yeah, it's going somewhere. So maybe the market is down in one side of the industry, but it's like rising somewhere else. Is it price point? Is it US manufacturing? Is it overseas manufacturing? And that is, I think it's a really good reason to like be diversified, not only in your product, in your techniques, in your manufacturing, but in your relationships and what you follow and observe in the industry.
No, for sure.
Sick. Reeve,
Reeve
cup wheel
grinding.
grinding. Reeve grinding.
Yep. I will be a reeve grinding shop.
When?
And what?
When?
It's in a port somewhere. So
Ooh, not
ports are a
stuck on a
little,
strike
ports are jacked.
still. Yeah, ports are jacked.
So I don't know.
Has not made it to Houston.
No.
Yeah.
No ETA
No
because
ETA.
of ports. Everyone.
Yeah. Sounds like
And
we're gonna have some updates coming
yeah, it's
along
going to
that
go
line.
from I have no idea when it's coming to yo,
Knock, knock.
get ready. So that's why I was stressed. And that's why this week was good because I set aside the time to like put the tools in place because there's lead times on the grinding wheels. There's lead times on getting the fixture made. I was like, if that machine, if I get a tracking number for that machine and I have don't have the designs ready, I'm going to start to get pretty panicky. Not because it's like it, in all honesty, it could show up and just sit for 2 months and we could just keep doing what we're already doing. But it's like I don't want to be in that scenario. I do not. I want it to show up and go to work. So
It's pretty, man. I'm really curious to see how it ties into your process and where efficiency lies or where just like, you know, the maybe like precision or quality is. Again, not being just like a straight bottom line, you know, like it might not be that much faster, but it might give like a slightly better result. There are ways that it feels really nice to do certain tasks. You know, this seems like one. So if you had like arguably a five axis would be like the ultimate version of a machine to run
Yes,
this because
it would.
then you can just run flat pallets. You're not having to create something with like offsets and angles and you could just run a five. So, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, and that's the thing about it though is by and large a five axis mill, this is a this there's a lot of force involved in cup wheel grinding. It's you'll see the videos where they'll be milling like a lion's head with a five axis with like a little lollipop end mill. You from what I can gather, you can't really do a simultaneous movement with a cup wheel grind because
Got
it's
it.
too much force to then have it be moving because those five axis movements, they have breaks. So like if you set it, okay, A axis go to 3 degrees, B axis go to 19 degrees, then you can have it put the brakes on and lock it.
Right.
And then you can go to putting a lot of force on it because it's
Right. But
in a
not
break.
simultaneous.
Yeah. So as far as I know, there's basically no one doing simultaneous five axis grinding. So the five axis is only creating an automatic fixture. And so there isn't
Right.
actually
That.
a benefit in the making of the knife. It's just it here's the biggest benefit in my book. If I get this fixture back from this shop and they built milled it on a five axis and I throw the knife on and I'm like, man, I'd like to tweak that plunge just a little bit. Guess what? I got to have another fixture made. Whereas if you have the five axis, you just go and type a couple things in the computer, move it a little bit, run another one, a little bit, run it another. So your fixture is like a living, operational, just changeable, real-time thing. That's beneficial. But once I, in my opinion, once it's in production, I don't know that it does a whole lot for you anymore because it's like it's just going to go to a spot and stay there the whole time. You know what I mean? So,
Amazing for prototyping,
yeah.
amazing for building fixtures. Well, and this is arguably like a scale, because at a point you could have probably have a five axis that was big enough to do like things simultaneously, but it's like your knee moving in a couple directions at the same time. Like it just puts more force probably on it than it should. But if you have a bigger machine, but again, then you start approaching a different conversation financially again, right? Okay.
So the
Woo.
one thing I might do, depending on how this works, is you could do one fixture with the 2 degree angle and then stack another fixture with the 3 degree angle. So in other words, you have two parts that were made with a four axis. And then you stack them, which creates a five axis configuration. So if I bought a fourth axis and put it on the Sile X9, like on the end of the table, it could
Yes.
be the little fixture building station.
Well, that's the fun thing about this, right? So say it does open up a little bit. People will 100% solve this for what they have available,
Yes. Yep.
right? Like someone is gonna 3D print a base plate that goes underneath their fixture plate, and that's gonna be a solve.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's gonna be enough things. Is it gonna be as efficient? Maybe not. Is it gonna break at some point? Maybe. Like, but people are gonna be like, well, I can't do this. I don't have a five axis shop in my neighborhood. I can't, but I want to try this.
Yeah.
They're gonna be
Yeah.
out there with sign blocks, you
Yep.
know,
No,
like
that people do
figuring it
that.
out.
People do
So,
that. So yeah, there's you have to get a five axis presentation of the knife by any means
by
necessary.
any means.
Hopefully a means that is somewhat vibration proof because on a six, I mean, we are eventually going to run an 8-inch wheel as well for bigger knives, but imagine an 8-inch wheel, all of the forces on one side, and it's pushing down and grinding at like a few thousand RPM. Like it's a vibration machine. Like it's going to generate vibration if you don't have everything tight. You know what I mean? So that's the biggest thing.
Okay. More to come.
More to come.
Should we wrap it? I
Let's
feel like
wrap
that
it.
was a lot. Sorry to leave you guys till the end on the Reeve grinding method, but I just knew that if we started talking about that would be the entire episode, which probably would have been ideal.
No.
But we're gonna have to talk about this again.
No, it's
So,
gonna, this is the introduction to the process that I'm now undertaking. So hopefully we'll circle back.
we will. Thank you all for listening. For those of you in the Patreon group, drop us some questions. Let us know if there's anything you want us to talk about, or, you know, anything like that. Thanks for the
Yes.
support.
Thank you. Peace.